True Spirituality, Meditations, My Meditations on the Book by Dr. Francis Schaeffer. He said, the question before us is what the Christian life, true spirituality, really is, and how may it be lived in the modern day? Dealing then with freedom from the bondage of sin, which took us through the concepts of salvation, and then freedom from the results of the bonds of sin, and this is the practice, the work of sanctification. It dawns on me that all of the references in the New Testament to the Christian life being the race, one of our songs dealt with that when the race is ended. Christianity is not a competition. It's not like we're trying to be better than somebody else. But in some circumstances, racing is like golf. It's a challenge to yourself. You're trying to do better. You're playing against yourself. In a lot of ways, that's what the Christian life, sanctification, is about. We are trying. I was talking about this Sunday, the only service we had, that the idea is that God is putting us through exercises for our training, and we are to run that race. Paul tells us that we're to try to have the idea that the dedicated runners put aside so much else in life to focus on the one goal of getting better and running more efficiently and so on. And I've never been a runner. I had pneumonia when I was a little kid. They, for whatever reason, they treated me by putting a tent thing over my bed and pumping steam in it, which completely drained me of strength. I plotted to run away several times because it was so bad. And I got as far as getting my legs off the bed and dangling on the floor, but I couldn't get up, so I was too weak. But my mom came, tucked me back in. It was a long time afterwards I realized that normally when you have pneumonia, you don't have spots on your face. It ends up I had measles at the same time. So I knew that. I knew measles didn't make you go into a steam tent, but I hadn't put it together. It was just one of those experiences of youth I never analyzed. But I'd try to run with the other boys afterwards, and I would stop and cough up blood. So I didn't do much running after that. But the idea, I did some weightlifting, I did some wrestling, I did some of those things. but it's really the same type of thing. You're trying to better yourself. You're trying to make yourself better. And this is the goal. It's not just your idea of what's better, or Jerry's idea of what's better. It's God's idea. And the idea is that we take our cue from him. So, freedom from the results of the bonds of sin. We've dealt with then the freedom of the bondage of sin, man's separation from God. Then getting into freedom from the results of the bonds of sin, man's separation from himself, the psychological problems we have within ourselves because we are broken as we understand ourselves, freedom from conscience, our thought life, substantial healing, and then finally of the total person. We come now to man's separation from his fellow man. And I mentioned the last time we were dealing with this that I was sort of expecting him to say, you have these relationship problems, let's do it God's way, and here's how to heal it. That's not really what he's doing. In this, he's analyzing what should our attitude toward human relationships be. How should we conceive of having human relationships? And so we're looking at substantial healing in personal relationships. This happens when we get the right idea of what a human relationship should be. So we've dealt with some things before, now looking at the proper orientation for human relationships. Let's look at having the correct sense of who you are. That's one of the big problems with the human relationship. When people act contrary to who they really are, they don't really get along with anybody else because it's not real. I've talked about people, what if you had a friend that always just wore a mask, you know, some sort of Halloween mask? It doesn't have to be scary, just a mask. And, you know, they sit down with you and say, "So how are you doing?" And you're going, "Why are you wearing a mask? Are you hiding something behind that mask? Are you smirking? Are you scowling? Well, what's going on behind the mask?" And yet many of us do that, a mask of our own making. So if a man puts himself, how you think about yourself, if a man puts himself at the center of the universe, then he tends to turn inward instead of outward. The relationships suffer because he believes that it's all about him. There's nothing that sours a relationship than the egotistical pride of the person that you're trying to get to know. You are only good enough for them if you can be of some assistance to them, you know. No give and take at all with them. So this person makes himself the great focus of the universe. Somebody said a man wrapped up in himself makes a very small package. And I like that concept. That's how it really comes across in human relationship. So this is the essence of man's rebellion against God. God said, "You should look to me." Man says, "I'm going to look to myself. I'll just take care of myself." God is the true center. God is the greatest good. So when God commands us to focus on him, he is commanding us, urging us toward the greatest good. So remember that the members of the Trinity, of the triunity, are eternal in their love and communication. Aside from creation, when all that there was God, in that place before he invented places, in the time before he invented time, there was God alone, but that God exists in three persons. He was never alone like you and I can be alone. He was always, each person was bathing the others in loving service. And of course, we don't know what that was all about, but God is love. That's what the idea is. So God focusing on himself involves communication and love. The references that we have of the Father speaking concerning the Son, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." It's about love and communication. When you turn inward, you're only one person. So you are communicating with no one else. Talking to yourself, mumbling to yourself, not reaching out, not communicating, not relating, just looking in. This is the tragedy of man. He is not adequate, not sufficient, alone. This is why we crave human relationship. And this aloneness leads not only to personal psychological problems, difficulty in understanding ourselves, but it also destroys relationships with others. When you begin to think and act as you are, the creature made by God, then you turn inward, not to self, but to God. And then you turn outward as an equal to other men. Other people aren't better than you. They're not necessarily worse than you, except in very relative terms. You know, you can be taller or shorter than somebody else, but as far as God is concerned, better or worse, you're a sinner bound for hell until you get saved, and then you're a child of God. So you can speak to others as an equal. You are no longer in your acts of communication just mumbling to yourself. You can talk as an equal to other humans. If you acknowledge that you are not God, you can't do anything you choose, and that all men are sinful, then you can have true human relationships without suffering by comparisons, by thinking that someone's better than you, or thinking that you're better than someone else, feelings of inadequacy. All right, let's look then at the unrealistic burdens of self-centeredness. Think of the problems that your self-centeredness, that it's all about me, puts on relationships. When a man tries to live his life without God, one of the things that happens is he does not take into consideration that all men are sinful. Emerson, everybody loves to quote Emerson. Emerson was just a liberal theologian. And one of the things that he was liberal about, one of the things that he rejected of the Bible, was the sinfulness of man. And he was just so welcomed by the literary community. Oh, here's somebody that says, we're okay. Let's listen to him. We're not okay. That's an illusion, you see. Life didn't work out well for Emerson. Things have been kind to him ever since, because they look back that he went to live in the woods and how wonderful that was. At the time of his life, he really had no relationships. He was pretty much rejected. Why? Because when you don't recognize that others are sinful, you expect more out of them. You expect something from your relationship as if that person shouldn't be making any mistakes. I'm not thinking you should make mistakes. I'm just saying you're thinking, I don't want any mistakes from that person, you see. And that puts an intolerable burden on that relationship. Now, none of these relationships, person to person, are great enough to build an entire life on. Only your relationship with God can do that. So, you know, a guy and a girl get together and they love each other and they say, you make my life worthwhile. I can build my life on you. That's too much. That's too much. What happens with that is suddenly you find that this person that you're idolizing is an idol met with clay feet that's beginning to crumble. And you say, well, then you're not who I thought you were. The foundation crumbles under your feet. The pressure that you're putting on that relationship destroys the relationship simply because you expected too much from it. You expected too much from the relationship partner. You expected them to be perfect when they are sinful. However, when you are happily a creature under God, who has been given a true relationship with Him, you're freed up to have human relationship among equals. Now, every human relationship is what God meant it to be, and you can receive from it all the benefits of it. It does not suffer and break under an intolerable burden. Here's the key. When you acknowledge that none of us are perfect in this life, you can enjoy what is beautiful in a relationship without despising it because it's not perfect. Don't reject human relationship if you find a defect in it. you're going to find a defect in it. That means you despise all relationships if you're honest. So don't do that. Come with a relationship, understanding I'm a sinner, saved by grace. This person is a sinner, hopefully saved by grace. What we have together as friendship, as love relationship, as parent-child relationship, whatever it is, there are many beautiful things that God built into that relationship. We can enjoy that. We can appreciate that. Because we appreciate what's there when we realize that sinners are going to mess things up. So we're not putting too unrealistic a burden on it. Now, realize another thing. When you have unrealistic expectations, these dry up relationships. We've talked about this in the past, about husband-wife relationships, where the husband does something, fixes something at the house, and it would be nice to hear, oh, I can always depend on you. Thank you for being, my go-to guy. You're the person who can take care of these things. See? Where what he often hears is, well, it's about time. I've only been asking you to do that for a year. My grandfather was like that. He was Mr. Fix-It. He'd go around the whole community. He'd go over to the poor widow lady and fix something. He would fix the leak in her faucet, you know. And she would look at him with adoration and say, thank you so much. I didn't know what I was going to do. Your wife is so lucky to have somebody like you. When he went home and fixed the faucet, she said, well, it's about time. Things have been leaking for a month, you know. He didn't get paid very well on that job. So what does it do? It just dries up the relationship. Expectations. I expected that. I'm not thanking you for something I expected. I'll criticize you if you don't do it. I expect you to do it. Dries up the relationship. No human relationship can be ultimately sufficient because we're dealing with fallible people. The only ultimately sufficient relationship can and must be with the transcendent God. Now, Christians who have this relationship with God and their human relationships now can be made real without putting the burden on it of being the ultimately sufficient thing. I'm counting every part of my life on this relationship. Christians are sinners who acknowledge that they are not perfect in this life. Let's just settle on that. They do not need to cast away every human relationship as imperfect. We are imperfect. We are imperfect humans helping one another toward God's perfection. We're one beggar trying to point the other beggar to where there's food. Based on the completed work of God, I can understand that my relationships can be substantially healed in this life. But I have to understand who I am. I have to understand what the purpose of the relationship is. So, two Christians find their relationships hitting a wall, having problems. What do? They come hand in hand, let's go together, admitting their failures to love as God loves. They come to God. And they put these failures under the blood of Christ. Forgive us for acting on our ungodly impulses. From being unkind with our words and holding back loving service from one another. Forgive us that. And that takes care of it, because if you're a Christian, then your sins, all of the sins that you would ever commit, have already been forgiven by God. So we make it right with Him, we get it settled, and we're forgiven. Then what do? Well, they get up And they go try again. See, they go on. It solves the problem. So think what this means in a practical way in the area of human relationships. In marriage, you're not putting the burden of being perfect on either one. In the church, I've heard of these things where somebody came up with something, the pastor was revealed as not being perfect, and people were aghast, can't believe it. The pastor's wife saying, well, I knew that. You think of the parent-child relationship. We often hear about the parent who has unrealistic expectations of the child. Wants them to be the star, wants them to be the A student, the overachiever, that type of thing. But in a lot of ways, children idealize parents and expect something of them that they can't be. The employer-employee relationship. You're not going to work for an employee that's perfect. Not going to happen in this life. And none of the people that work for you are going to be perfect. So you've got to build into your thinking, build into the relationship, dealing with people who are not perfect. Now, I want you to think of this. Your life testimony about God. We were singing about testimony. Your life testimony about God. Consider this. The faithful Christian demonstrates the existence of God. Your life exhibits the existence of God to everybody around you. If you fail in this regard, where is the demonstration that God is personal? Where is the demonstration of our person-to-person relationship? And there must be a demonstration. That's our calling. We're supposed to share this with others. So what's wrong? Loveless self-centeredness. It's all about me. It becomes a sea in which all must drown. We enter into it like Adam and Eve did. Oh, I see, I can get something God told me not to, and it'll be good for me. It seems to promise personal prominence as we love ourselves. I can take care of myself better than anybody else. But in reality, not only will my relationships drown, but I will also drown, because that's not reality. I'm not the center of the universe. Our testimony of God drowns because it shows nothing but loveless impersonality. You're living as though evolution were true. That you just happen to be an organism built by accident, an organic machine, soulless machine, no person involved. You're just an animated sack of chemicals. As Christians, we are not to be in fellowship with false doctrine. We realize that. We should reject false doctrine. Well, let's realize this, that in the midst of our battle against false teaching, we must not forget that the true testimony of proper personal relationships is based on loving care. We are showing God to others. What did Christ say was the badge of being a Christian? By this shall all men know that you are my disciples if you go to church on Sunday. He didn't say that. If you love one another. The loving relationship is the badge that God is in you. Now, let's look at the scriptural orientation. God commands, Philippians 2:3, let nothing be done, relationship, let nothing be done through strife. This is fighting. Or vainglory. I am glorious. But in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. See? So the word esteem means to treat, to act. It doesn't mean I have to think that person is actually better than me. I know that's not true. But I'm going to deal with them as though I did. I'm going to show them the esteem as if they were the better person, as if they were the master and I was the servant. Do you get that? This is a command. You're not fighting with that person if you're esteeming them better than yourself. You're not in vain glory over them if you're esteeming them better. So with lowliness of mind, approach it that way. Remember what Christ said? He says, you go to the banquet and they have the head table, the upper seats. He says, don't go sitting there saying, who better than this? Who better than me that would sit here? And then the people come in and say, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place. Go sit down there. And then in all humility, you have to go, oh, well, I got it. He says, rather, come in and take the lower seat. And then someone comes in and says, oh, you shouldn't be down here. We wanted you up here. What was the difference? You approached it with lowliness of mind. You didn't think you were less than anybody else. You just approached it with lowliness of mind, esteeming other better than self. This is the key. When I see and acknowledge something good in another man, it elevates him and it minimizes me. You say, well, I don't like that minimizing part. What happens when I'm minimized? I'm humbled. What happens when I'm humbled? It puts me in the right place for me to be blessed of God. Two verses, James 4:6. But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace, ability, unto the humble. Don't reject being humbled. 1 Peter 5:5. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another. This is the whole human relationship. Be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Do you want the grace of God in your life? Do you want empowered by him? Take the humble path. Here's the thing. In the relationship, when I see and acknowledge wrong in others, recognize I am tempted to exalt self. He did bad and I didn't. See? Listen to Galatians 6:1. Brethren, if or although a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, point your finger and condemn him. No. Ye that are spiritual, restore such a one. But notice this, in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. When you enter into trying to help somebody out of a problem, beware, because the temptation is there for you to feel superior, to deal with them as an inferior. If I judge in pride, my fellowship with God fails, because who is the true judge? God, see. So whose place am I taking when I presume to judge somebody's heart? I'm pretending to be God. If I seek to restore that person in a spirit of meekness, then I approach the problem as God's creature. I'm under God, made by him, and not his replacement. When I long to be seen by others as right, I must fail. I'll come in and help you, poor sinner person. Now you have to fail. So we must turn people toward God and not toward our artificial standard of righteousness. You didn't do it right because this is how I would do it. This is the wrong concept. Show me the Word of God. You say, I have a problem with what you're doing. Show me from the Word of God what I should be doing. I don't take my standard from you. Paul said it's a little thing to be judged by other people. In fact, he says, I don't even judge myself. I don't even trust my own ability to understand this. So it's either what God says or it doesn't really matter. If you do God's work, I put it in quotes, by judging the hearts of men, your personal fellowship with God is destroyed. God told Samuel, man looketh on the outward appearance, God looketh on the heart. My wife was the first one who really pointed this out to me. She said, that's not a criticism. It's an acknowledging of the truth. He's not saying you ought to look on the heart. He's saying man can't. All we can see is the outside. Only God can see the heart. This is why Christ said, judge not lest you be judged. Judging is saying what's in your heart. I don't know what's in your heart. I may know that you killing the neighbor's cat was not a good thing. But I'm not going to tell you what was in your heart, though I will definitely have my suspicions. Of course, it's not wrong to be right. We don't want to go through life saying, well, who am I to say? Well, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the guy that's talking about the Bible. I know what's right. I know what's wrong. So I can't tell what's in your heart, but I can tell if you're doing right or doing wrong based on the Bible. So it's not wrong to be right. Just let us carefully work never to have the wrong attitude in being right. Never forget that your relationship with your fellow man must be personal. Deal with them as a real person. To love the man who is wrong is not to accept his sin, but is to long to see him to become better. That's what I desire for myself. Otherwise, not only is my communication with the man broken, but also my communication with God is broken. For this is the sin of breaking the second great commandment, to love my neighbor as myself. I want myself to get better, not just be content, drift down, float down the river in my sin. I want to become better. I want to fight against the wrong motives. And so if I'm trying to correct, if I'm trying to instruct you in these things, it's not because I hate you. It's because I'm your best friend. Everybody else is saying to you, oh yeah, just do what you want to do, because they're tired of hearing you whine about it. They don't want to be a person that you're going to complain about. Just go ahead and do what you want. But I'm going to try to be a friend that says, that's not what you ought to be doing. You ought to correct your life. 1 Corinthians 13:6 says, love rejoiceth not in iniquity. All of the people that counseled you to go ahead and do that self-centered, unloving thing, they were not helping you. They were not showing you love. That was not loving kindness. Because love does not rejoice in iniquity. What does love do? In the relationship, it rejoices in the truth, or rejoices with the truth. So this is true even when that person is desperately wrong and I am clearly right. I'm not going to rejoice that he had the sin so that I can stand over him and tell him what to do. When he is wrong, we must not rejoice in his iniquity. When I am right and dealing with somebody else who is wrong, I cannot use it as an excuse to violate God's command, change it over to esteem self better than others. Aha, I found somebody doing wrong. I can esteem myself better than him. That's not what God said. He said, esteem other better than myself. So, with that, we have the healing of relationships, how to approach this, how to think about it, how to become the person that demonstrates God in personal relationships. Comments or questions?